Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amaduri, and I'm joined today with the infamous David Morgan of the Morgan Report. He's an expert on the markets, and he's a regular guest here at Crush the Street. He's given us tremendous amounts of insight over the years. And, you know, now we're seeing precious metals go over 1,300, and he was someone that wasn't afraid to talk about it, you know, when it was lower, you know, reminding us the importance of it, why we should care about it. And of course, you know, here we are able to bring it up and in a, I guess, a little more positive environment, I would call it. But I think it's still very early considering where we were, where precious metals have been, and all that we have going on throughout the world. So without any further ado, David Morgan, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Kenneth, thanks for having me.
Well,
yeah, if I was starting,
if you want to respond to that, go ahead.
Well, what I want to point out is that I called the bottom finally. I missed a couple, I admit it. But the, and I forget the exact number, 1058. I know the date was December 2015. And that was the bottom for gold and silver in the recent, you know, in the last 8-9 years. So the, so the 2.5 year uptrend was breached to the downside in gold and silver as well. And a lot of our contemporaries said, well, that's it. You could at least double bottom, if not see $700 gold or $800 gold, sub $1,000 gold, blah, blah, blah. And I said, first of all, I'm not going to rule it out because markets know more than anyone. But secondly, I doubt it. I really believe that that is it. And so just because the 2.5 year uptrend was breached, and it was, does not mean that the uptrend would not continue. And it has. So getting to the 1300, my point being is that you really have to pay attention to what the market is saying. And the market is finally saying we've got through the psychological barrier of 1300. Now the next challenge, it's a big one, is 1350. I'm saying everything basis the U.S. dollar. I mean, if I can digress a bit further, if you look at gold in terms of other currencies, if you're looking at the Canadian dollars, you're happy. Australian dollars, you're happy. You're looking at gold in terms of other currencies, a lot of people are extremely happy. Because in terms of their currencies, gold's doing quite well. But in terms of the United States dollar, not the case. I think this year we're going to have a good year, not a great year. I do think 1350 will be challenged. I don't know how soon. I think 1300 may be challenged just as a test of the breakout. And then we'll continue on. So probably said enough. But you know, you got to watch the talking heads. And certainly I'm not the perfect. I've made missed calls and whatever. I usually admit it immediately. Because if the market shows me something different, then I'll, you know, the market will change my mind instantly. Because again, the market knows more than anyone. But remember, just a few months ago, how many people were saying, you know, we're going to see $700 gold, you know, and that's not what took place. We've got good momentum now. The stock market is starting to roll over. Bond market's kind of iffy, especially on the corporate side. So there's a lot of fundamental factors that are going to help the gold price going forward.
You know, one thing I'll point out is, especially during December, you know, maybe January, we had a certain amount of days where even when stocks would bounce back, stocks were rising, gold was rising in tandem, which I thought was very interesting. And I feel like that was the market telling us something, that something has changed beneath the surface. And maybe you can address that.
Sure. I mean, you got to look for subtle clues. There's a lot that I have. I wouldn't say mastered, but certainly have learned. The market has taught me over the years. Like on a breakout, what I like to see is silver outperform gold percentage-wise at least 2 to 3-fold. So if gold's up 2% for that day, I want to see silver up at least 4% to 6% for that day, that type of thing. Volume is always the key. If you can see, you know, some big move in price, but the volume is weak, it means almost nothing. It usually means that it's going to fall back to whatever level it was previously. You need to see it sustainable. You need to see consistency, which is where the, I'll call it the manipulation because it is, are masters. I mean, they can kind of paint the chart and get people excited and get the technical funds to do certain things, and then it doesn't hold. So I'm pretty careful. I'd rather buy a little bit higher on the long side or a little lower on the downside, after the trend is more clearly established. which usually means being a little bit more patient than most people that trade. And of course, we trade and invest. Most people that follow my work and are premium members are investors, not traders. But in this market, you're really a bit on the foolish side if you're not willing to make some trades, especially, you know, the type of trading that we do, which is, you know, maybe 8 or 9 months. I mean, if you go back to the 2015 bottom, we put in First Majestic as a trade, and that stock went up almost tenfold. And I called the bottom and the top, and I don't get it right every time, but I get it right more than most people would think that don't pay me. And that was a huge win. Now, some of my own people said, well, it's only going to correct 30%. Why would I get out now? And of course, you know, I'm free market. Do what you will. It's your money. But, you know, I paid a pretty heavy price because with a 30% correction in silver, which is actually, you know, kind of was the top. I mean, I'm digressing again, Kevin. Sorry, I'm getting excited. But, you know, when that 2016 market took place, I was pretty convinced back then that that was it. We're on our way again. And really, we spent 2 more years going sideways to down. 2017 was not a good year. 2018, obviously, was not a good year. Now we're coming back up, and I think finally this is it. Back to you.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And I'd like to touch on the psychology of precious metals here, you know, going through 1300, because I feel like many people psychologically, you know, who are value investors, you know, like the idea of buying gold sub $1,300. And now that we're over $1,300, they might wait because they don't want to pay the slight premium that, you know, they're now seeing in the markets. And a lot of times what I've noticed, you know, if we look at what happened in Bitcoin, what happened in the overall equities market, is things keep going and people end up having to wait to buy at, you know, let's call it $1,500 gold or $1,600 gold before they're convinced that they're missing this boat.
Yeah, it's something I could lecture on that all day long. And it wouldn't be part of it would be my lecture from, you know, my input, but a lot of it would be from, you know, my mentors that have taught me so much over the years and stuff I've read, you know, in particular classes, courses, seminars that I've attended. But there's so many ways to make money in a market. The problem with most people is they'll find a method and then they'll try that method. And like buy low, sell high. I mean, everyone knows that one. And so they'll try that method and it doesn't work. So then they'll adopt a different one or they'll change their strategy midstream. I mean, you have to really be consistent to make money in the market. Doesn't mean you can't apply different tools, and you can apply different tools to different, you know, situations. I mean, I do some trading and I do some investing. There's a different mindset. But back on point, you know, there's nothing more bullish than a new high. So going back to what you said, I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting you. I'm just pointing something out. But if you got, let's say, a penny stock that goes from 12 cents to 12 bucks, how many new highs has that stock made?
Many, right?
A bunch. A lot. So the reason you can do this, if you know what you're doing and you know you're going to not get greedy, is you could buy on a breakout. To combine a new high. The reason not a new high is there's no overhead resistance, which means that everyone that bought that stock at 12 cents and now it's at 24 is probably going to hold it. Now, some will cash out and do a free trade like I teach and Mary Katusa teaches and Casey and all of us pretty much, especially on these super speculative situations. Once you've doubled your money, Rick Rule, we all tell people, look, you got $1,000 in this thing and it's gone to two, take your $1,000 off the table and play with their money. It's still your money, but you've got your capital back. Anyway, moving on, I digress again. So you get a new high, it's 24 cents. So everyone's holding because they don't know how high it's going. So it goes to 36 cents and there's more buyers. So when it's being tightly held and there's no overhead resistance, there's very little selling pressure, almost none. So any small amount of new buying will drive the price higher, especially in a small market like a penny stock or a small commodity like palladium. So new buying takes it higher. So now those people are holding tight. A little bit more new buying comes in. So it makes another new high and another new high. Well, again, if you know what you're doing, which I emphasize because a lot of people think they know what they're doing, and even the pros don't get it right 100%, is you buy on that breakout. And of course, you have to look at it too. You have to study it and see how long it's been going and factor some common sense into the picture. But that's the idea. So a lot of these programs, they do what we call make the middle. So if a stock goes from 12 cents to 12 bucks, they buy it at two and they sell it at six. So they get that momentum and they don't care that it goes from six to 12. They're not interested in that. They're interested in profit, because the only way you can make money in those vertical rises is to sell in the strength. Once that situation, be it a commodity, a stock, an ETF, I don't care what it is, a master limited partnership, it doesn't matter. You must sell in this somewhere where there's volume to buy it and people want it. Once it's peaked and the buyer of last resort is bought, there's nothing but downside. So these, what we call popcorn rallies, usually go right up and right down. So maybe that's a little bit of an education, but all I'm trying to point out is there's different techniques for different situations, and you have to apply the right tool at the right time. If you don't, then stand aside, learn more, study more. You know, you don't want to use your own money, not only investing or trading, until you've got a pretty good feel that you can, you know, do well. Now, I'm going to do a lecture on the webinar called The Art of Speculation. And this almost contradicts everything I just said, Kenneth, because if you do speculating right, and let's say I've got a list of 10 highly speculative stocks in the portfolio, and let's say if you use how to use the Morgan Report with your net worth, you're allowed to buy $500 worth of all five or all 10. You got 5,000 spread out over 10 stocks. So 500, 500, 500. No matter what story, who tells it, how much you trust me, blah, blah, it doesn't matter. You got a $500 bet. And let's say all nine of them go to zero. Okay? So you lost $4,500. But that one goes up 50-fold. Have you made money?
Yes.
Damn right you've made money. And that's the art of speculation. But people don't understand the art of speculation. They understand the art of hype and pump. And they'll see something that comes into the market and it's so and so and it sounds so good and blah, 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 blah. And the story is so fantastic. So instead of spreading their money out over 10, they buy that one because it sounds better than the other nine. That's not the way to speculate.
That's a good word right there, David. All right. So getting back to, you know, kind of overall precious metals here, is there any other time in history that we can compare or just get a feel for what we're sensing right now? And, you know, as far as the markets go, you know, people talk about the 1970s being this very, very rough time, tumultuous, the economy being rough. And, you know, people that talk about it say it was even worse than the 2008 financial crisis. Now, I wasn't old enough or I wasn't even born yet to know what the 1970s were like, other than what I've read in textbooks and, you know, newspapers, things like that. But what are your thoughts on this? Is there anything that we can compare what we're seeing today in 2019 to give us an idea on what the future might rhyme like, right?
Great question. This is opinion only, so write it down or ignore it. I think your analogy to the 70s is pretty good. In the 70s, it was U.S.-centric. I mean, in the 70s, the U.S. was, you know, a manufacturing center. The EU was called the common market. China was like a non-event. And so the U.S. pretty much is a dictate to the world. Even though, and today it still has a lot of sway because of the reserve status currency. But now we've increased complexity. And whenever you've increased complexity, you've also increased the ability to have failure. So now we've got the EU that's, you know, one currency. We've got China, which is, of course, the second, if not almost the first largest economy on the planet. And you've got all of these tensions, not only with these trade wars, but the manufacturing cycle, shipping, transportation, communication, and all the subtleties going on, and or not so subtleties going on in the geopolitical sphere between, you know, warring factions. So very complicated. So I'd say it's the 1970s, except it's global. It's more complicated or more complex, which means it's easier to fail. And that there are more disgruntled parties across the planet than there were in the past. So I am most concerned that the contraction that's taking place now in the physical economy cannot be papered over as it has been done for the last, let's say, 7 or 8 years. Basically, the overall economic conditions have grown, I think, on a global basis, on the aggregate, somewhat. But that's stalled out and starting to contract now. And so you want to watch the oil price, you want to watch the bonds, and you want to watch the overall stock market, particularly the U.S. stock market. Gold will be the key as far as the barometer telling people that things are not as good as perhaps the mainstream financial press reports. And it's not a savior, but it is a hedge. And depending on what your financial conditions are, if you're into financial markets, it's a way to hedge your position. And that's what you need, the correct amount. You don't need to overdo it, but you don't want to underdo it. You certainly don't want to ignore it.
Okay, David. So I'd like to talk about the other side of the coin here just for just a second, and maybe just about things that we don't know that we don't know. And I'll preface it with this. You know, in the early 1990s, you know, it was said that stocks were getting very overvalued, right? But then you had the onset of the internet and this tech revolution, and you know, now we're seeing blockchain. So there was a lot of backfilling of earnings that took place in the 90s and the 2000s, and here we are today. And I know it can be argued that stocks are very overvalued. I've written about it, I've talked about it, I've interviewed about it time and time again. But is there anything that we could be missing that's coming down the pipeline that can really backfill all of the problems that we're seeing on the surface at the moment?
Well, I won't rule it out, because certainly, you know, the market has certainly humbled me many times, and quite frankly, I don't see it. But I can't rule it out. I mean, maybe something out there that I'm not aware of. But generally speaking, I mean, if you look at what is a stock, you know, we all talk about the stock market, or the equity market, but what we're really talking about is a business. So if you've got business X, and it's, I don't care what it is, it could be a technology company, it could be a manufacturing company, it could be a sales company, it could be, you know, whatever, big data. What you have to really ask yourself is, if I were an independent investor and I was going to buy that company, what would I pay for it? And why would you buy any business? You buy a business for what?
To make money or
profit. Buy profit. So what you're buying is a profit stream. So if you're going to buy a profit stream, what are you going to pay for that profit stream? When's your payback? What's your payback day? So if that company makes $1 million a year, are you going to pay net, let's say net profit, are you going to pay $10 million for that company so that in the 11th year, you've got back all of your capital and you're starting to earn 10% on your money?
Well, it depends. If the next year it goes...
Of course, yeah. It's just a hypothetical.
I'm sure. No, I know.
But so that a 10 to 1 isn't really a bad... Or PE. I mean, if you're going to pay 10 times earnings, then, you know, you got a pretty cheap company, according to the, you know, basic common sense, if there's anything left of common sense in the stock market. So let's say that makes sense to you. Well, you have 10 million, no, but you've got five. So now you borrow the difference or whatever. I don't want to get too complicated here. The point is that these valuations are stock evaluations and not company evaluations, if it making any sense. Now, if you go to the blue chips or some of the stalwarts or most of the manufacturing companies, then you might get closer to reality. But most everything that you look at, if you looked at it as you're an individual investor and what would you pay for that stream of earnings, it's very clear that these things are overvalued. I mean, astronomically overvalued. And yet very few people take such a common sense approach. But, you know, value investing is called value investing for a reason. That's why I like Buffett. And Buffett looks at payback time. When I put in X amount, when do I get my money back? If you're not getting your money back in 7, 8, 9 years, 5 years, you know, why would I want that business? Why would you want a business that was never going to pay you back? You know, I mean, look at Amazon and their earnings, you know, look at the stock price. I mean, I don't want to pick on Amazon. I use it all the time, so I won't be too big of a hypocrite. But from a perspective of a company, it's an interesting company.
Yeah, absolutely. Points well taken. And I think that's the point of doing these interviews. It's to get an understanding of what is probable, what is likely to happen. And, you know, some of the biggest things that we can take away from, you know, investing is, you know, how to protect our wealth, how to not lose money overall. What's our best approach to make sure we don't lose money so that we can thrive in the future? Because something that we all should consider, if you lose 50% of your investment your whole investment. You got to get 100% return just to get back to even. So protecting your wealth is a huge factor when considering what to do with your money. So David, if you would, why don't you close us out here with some final thoughts and for sure let people know where they can visit you and learn more about the Morgan Report.
Okay. Well, I have, you know, a paid side and a free side. So themorganreport.com, you can sign up with the first name and email. It's a double opt-in, which means you'll get an email from us saying, hey, do you really want this newsletter? Do you say yes, and you're on board? We do a little advertising on that from time to time. So don't let that dissuade you from getting all the interviews I do during the week and a weekly wrap-up. We also, from time to time, will allow a company to promote their situation. I vet every one of them. Are they as good as what's in the Morgan Report itself? The answer is usually not, but it's worth it as far as a speculative situation is concerned. I will mention that I've started another newsletter. It's on energy. You can see the entire webinar. Just go to comingenergyboom.com. There's no the. It's comingenergyboom.com. You can watch that webinar. It's more for cash flow and long-term investing combined. And that's really about it. I appreciate the time, Kenneth. It was interesting talking to you. And I delved into some subjects that or a different viewpoint on subjects I really don't get asked too often. It was actually a pleasure to kind of go through the very basics for people that maybe are new to the stock market or maybe seasoned investors that kind of forgot the core issues of what investing is really supposed to be about.
Absolutely. Well, David, hey, you're always welcome here at Crush the Street. We really appreciate you. And thank you so much for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.